In today's edition of Taking Aim, Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen continue their analysis of what has been called World War IV. And with us to introduce the piece are Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, coming to you Tuesday, June 10th, 2003. Today, we're going to play part 4 of World War IV, our premium for the WBAI Spring Fun Drive. You can get still the premium for the WBAI Fund Drive by going to the WBAI internet site, www.wbai.org. And there you'll see instructions. World War IV is 095 for Taking Aim World War IV. If you haven't contributed yet to the fund drive, we'll hope you'll do so now, and we especially know you're going to appreciate part 4 of World War IV, which deals with the profits, the P-R-O-F-I-T-S, of war. Ralph?
The profits of war are directly keyed to the report in today's Asia Times, Maya, called The Ever-Growing U.S. Military Footprint, an important article by David Eisenberg, that outlines the unprecedented expansion of U.S. imperial presence of a military character throughout the world and underlines what World War IV is designed to accomplish. Here we have the documentation of vast expansion of U.S. bases CENTCOM's forward headquarters and command centers at Camp al-Salia, and at Doha Airport in Camp, was known as Camp Snoopy at Camp Doha, Camp Arif Jan, Ali Asalem Air Base, and Ahmed al-Jaba Air Base, headquarters for the CENTCOM Army, a substantial expansion in Manama in Bahrain for the U.S. 5th Fleet, expansion into the Thumrait Naval Air Base in Oman, and documentation provided by Global Security, the transfer of SEAB International Airport to private sector management as a means through which the private contracting out for special force operations can be facilitated. Baghdad now a central instrument for the same expansion of U.S. bases throughout Iraq, Central Asia, Georgia, Vaziani base, home for special forces for a mandate of a further 2 years, Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, expansion of the forward bases for targeting China, Iran, and India itself. The article is extraordinary in documenting what the Associated Press reported on June 3rd about the use of Balkans bases for staging points for interventions, further interventions throughout the region. Here we are with the architecture of World War IV physically being expanded in place.
For those of you who are just tuning in for the first time, World War IV is an expression coined by former CIA Director James Woolsey to describe the permanent war, the future assaults such as the recent assault against Iraq and the attacks that will soon take place against Iran, Syria, North Korea, and many other countries throughout the world. He considered that World War III was the Cold War, and consequently the current military excursions, World War IV. 51% of the discretionary federal budget is spent now on these wars of aggression. And as President Bush and Congress have passed an over $350 billion tax cut, the first of many the second of the various tax cuts, and the administration plans tax cuts every year, we should note that the richest 10%, the people in the United States, will receive almost 80% of the benefits.
Paul Krugman in the New York Times, in a piece called Standard Operating Procedure, laid this out. The 8 million children denied any tax breaks by last-minute switcheroo is only the beginning. In total, 50 million American households, a majority with members over 65, get nothing. A further 20 million, less than $100. A great majority of those left behind are the people who pay the taxes. The overwhelming beneficiaries of these are the huge corporations and the rich, who in fact are the very bodies that pay no taxes and shelter their income in offshore accounts. An important article in the New York Times was published on June 3rd, featuring a letter by Charles Rangel, the 15th District Member of Congress, in which he referred to the article by Paul Krugman, and he said, "While I commend Mr. Krugman, he understates the meaning of this Bush plan when he talks about taxes going up and vital programs being gutted. Both, in fact, will occur. States and cities have already raised property taxes, excise taxes, to meet the shortfall. The taxes hit low-income and middle-income families across the board. Social Security and Medicare trust funds are being rapidly funneled out to give the money back to the wealthy taxpayers. That is to say, these two programs are going to end. Not be reformed, but end. That money is no longer going to be there." Rangel states, "The runaway debt, the elimination of confidence in this capitalist economy, will shipwreck our entire society, and all the money in the world won't buy a life raft." This is a rather dramatic acknowledgement of the deep and burdened crisis of capitalism, which is being imposed upon the working poor and disguised by a rapid military expansion to deepen profits and to intensify repression at home in order to cover the wholesale theft of the income of working people and the wholesale onslaught upon our living standards.
We're going to you now with World War IV, Part 4. Remember, you can have all four parts by going to the WBAI website, www.wbai.org, for information about how you can make your contribution to WBAI for Taking Aim's Gift to You, premium number 095. You can reach us at takingaim@pacbell.net or call us at the station at 212-209-2953. We'll be with you next week with a new program of Taking Aim. Meanwhile, here is World War IV, Part 4.
World War IV, Part 4. Ralph?
We have been describing the plans for a ad seriatim system of attack, preemptive strike, the attacks on Syria, on Iran, on North Korea, the military operations now in West Africa and in East Africa and in North Africa, the real nature of the ruling classes' attempts to roll back the gains of the colonial revolution, to roll back the gains of working people of the past.
The anti-colonial revolution.
Yes, the anti-colonial revolution, the gains of working people of the past 100 years. But there is another and very specific dimension to the militarization of the United States and the apparatus of suppression and the state terrorism with which all of this is to be brought into play, the false category of terror, the contrivance, the pretexts, the black ops, the staged operations from the Remember the Maine to the Gulf of Tonkin to the 1993 bombing of the World Trade Center to 9/11 itself to the current wave of staged events from Riyadh to Casablanca, from Nairobi to Mombasa. Yes, there's another dimension to this tiny cabal that commands capitalist state control in this country. San Francisco Chronicle reports on May 18th, military waste under fire, $1 trillion missing, Bush plan targets Pentagon accounting. The Defense Transformation for the 21st Century Act arrives at a time when the nonpartisan General Accounting Office has raised the volume of its perennial complaints about the financial woes at defense, which has failed its seventh audit in as many years. Well, what does it mean when they described failing an audit? Defense has long been notorious for waste, and recent government reports suggest the Pentagon's money management woes have reached astronomical proportions. A study by the Defense Department's Inspector General found that the Pentagon cannot account for more than $1 trillion in money spent. The GAO report found defense inventory systems so lax that the United States Army has lost track of 56 airplanes, 32 tanks, 36 Javelin Missile Command launch units, and it goes on and on. $1 trillion is missing. Talk about deja vu. The $1 trillion missing for the year 2002 and 2003 is the little continuation of the pattern of kleptocratic disappearance of funds. The U.S. publication Insight in the News reported on, and I did a particular essay on this called Permanent War, the Stakes for Working People, last October. And in that article, I cite the Insight on the News for August 10th, 2001. Quote, every year, trillions of dollars go unaccounted by federal agencies. Robert Lieberman, the Deputy Inspector General of the Department of Defense, admitted that $4.4 trillion in the Pentagon books had to be cooked to compile required financial statements. And the quote continues. In one year, $1.1 trillion was simply gone. No one can be sure when, where, and to whom the money went. Untold, the article continues, untold trillions of dollars are stolen every year and disappear into offshore numbered accounts, holding companies, and banks without records. The article spells out that in the year 2000, the Pentagon, quote, lost, unquote, more than the $855 billion in individual taxes that the IRS collected in 1999. And indeed, on September 10th, 2001, September 10th, the eve of the attacks on the World Trade Center and Pentagon, CBS News and its anchor Dan Rather reported the Pentagon had, quote, lost, unquote, $2.3 trillion, fully one quarter of its budget for the decade. $2.3 trillion, $4.4 trillion, now another $1 trillion. Let's put this in perspective. Helen Caldicott, the anti-nuclear activist from Australia, calculated that $1 trillion represents $1,000 expended every minute since the life of Jesus.
Hey,
this is a kleptocracy, Maya. This is the other side of the dependence on arms expenditure to which the capitalist economy is addicted. It is sheer, unadulterated theft.
It is not a matter of accounting. It is a matter of siphoning money, taking it from the American people and putting it in the hands of the few cronies of those in power. 15 biggest military contractors in 2001, as reported by the Department of Defense and as presented by the Wall Street Journal. Lockheed Martin. Now remember, many of these companies are conglomerates, are combinations of several companies. For instance, in 1993, Lockheed was number two and Martin Marietta was number three in the ranking of military contractors. Now, in 2001, Lockheed Martin was number one, the combination of the two behemoth companies, with $14.69 billion of work. Boeing, number two, You may think of Boeing as those airplanes, but Boeing also produces satellite systems, missile-guided systems, and the fueling tankers for those military jets. Close behind Lockheed Martin, Boeing was $13.34 billion in just 1 year. And all those aircraft carriers, Newport News Shipbuilding, $5.89 billion. The United States is the only country that has 10 and even more in the works aircraft carriers around the world, in the seas around the world. Raytheon, with its guidance systems, 5.58, close behind the Newport News Shipbuilding. Northrop Grumman, the parent company of Vanel, also close behind with $5 billion. And it goes on with General Dynamics, United Technologies, TRW, Science Applications International, General Electric, the Carlyle Group with over $1 billion, HealthNet, providing the health services for the military, the veterans, and the other and their families, close to $1 billion. Talk about universal health care, certainly is there for the military. DynCorp, the private military contractor, and also DynCorp provides, as does Lockheed Martin, much of the information technology, the computer systems for not just the Department of Defense, but for many of the federal contracting, like the FBI, and also states, for instance, the state of various states like California, Texas. Most of the states contract out with private companies such as Lockheed Martin for its the welfare systems and other aspects of computer needs in the states. Honeywell International and BAE. BAE, by the way, is a British company, and that's at number 15 of the 15 largest military contractors. Now let's look at what $1 trillion compares to. To enroll two children in Head Start would be $14,000. One cluster bomb, just one cluster bomb among the thousands that they launch, is $6,633 each. Nutrition supplements for 200,000 eligible families would be comparable to seven unmanned predator drones. To eradicate polio worldwide, $275 million. That only gets you 3 tests of the missile defense system. Vaccinating 10 million children, $350 million, buys you only 6 Trident missiles. Now, this was prepared by Frieda Berrigan of the World Policy Institute. 7,000 units of affordable housing is comparable to $494 million. That's $500 million only. Remember, we've got to get up to $1 trillion. And that's comparable to the military aid to Colombia for just 1 year. Something really important to look at, especially as they're cutting back on education nationally. For instance, in Oakland, in Berkeley, here where KPFA is, they just laid off, gave final notices to over 100 teachers. And in cities across California, many teachers are being laid off. The annual salary and benefits for 38,182 elementary school teachers is $2.1 billion, and that is each teacher getting $55,000 each is $2.1 billion, and that will only buy you one stealth bomber.
Let's put this in some perspective, Maya. Trillions of dollars are disappearing into offshore accounts. The so-called defense or arms contractors, whose personnel and executives are now in the Bush cabinet and in all the key positions of authority, Pay no taxes for 10 years at a time. The Citizens Committee for Tax Justice has documented how General Dynamics and Lockheed and Northrop Grumman and the major military producers have not only no taxes paid for periods as long as 10 years, but get tax rebates, money back from the government. Meanwhile, while trillions of dollars disappear, the article in the San Francisco Chronicle tells us that the Department of Defense has 2,200 overlapping financial systems that cost $18 billion a year. So 2,200 financial systems to facilitate the disappearance of trillions of dollars. This little bureaucratic apparatus of theft costs itself $18 billion a year. Daniel Bryan, director of the Project on Governmental Oversight, a nonprofit group in Washington, D.C., stated that this waste, as he calls it, is so ingrained in the defense budget because any opposition to defense spending, military spending, we should call it aggression spending, is portrayed as unpatriotic, and the legislators are concerned about Pentagon pork. You have a black hole at the Pentagon for money and a blind Congress, not a blind Congress, a purchased Congress, whores in Congress, instruments of military expenditure in Congress. While indeed the Republican and Democratic parties compete with each other, they fall over each other to increase the military expenditure. A critic of the handling of the Iraqi reconstruction contracts, Congressman Waxman stated that these proposals are a military wish list to take advantage of wartime feeling. Congressman Waxman stated, Secretary Rumsfeld is marching through Congress like he marched through Iraq. What is Congress? What are these Democratic and Republican representatives but the paid instruments of capitalist rule and the beneficiaries of the pork, as they called it, that goes into the pockets of the Pentagon contractors and the Pentagon functionaries and into the offshore accounts to the tune of trillions of dollars, cannibalizing the infrastructure of the United States, while our schools, while our hospitals, while our clinics, while our food supply, while our national health is in crisis mode. This is the inherent character of the decaying capitalism that has been reduced to the point where its falling rate of profit compels it to pursue a series of wars, the permanent war, the World War IV, but with a very significant complement. They are destroying the social net. They are driving the living standards of the American people into the dust, and they are preparing an apparatus of repressive rule to prevent the population of this country from organizing itself for the fight back, a fight back that is the absolute essential ingredient for the survival of a livable society in this country.
Ralph, the San Francisco Chronicle on March 23rd of this year, in its business section, when it was looking at the war on Iraq, had an entire series called Bay to Baghdad. And it showed just what you were saying about the congressional representatives, because it said scores of area businesses feed the military's machines need for gear. We have to recognize that 51% of the federal budget, the discretionary portion of the federal budget, goes for military spending. 51%. The discretionary budget is the portion that excludes Social Security, because Social Security is mandated by taxes, and also Medicare. But of the discretionary budget, 51% goes to the military. And in the Bay Area, in the area called Silicon Valley, the area of the great computer companies such as Hewlett-Packard and Intel, at its peak in the 1980s, across 500 acres in Sunnyvale and Palo Alto and other locations, Lockheed had for decades been Santa Clara County's largest employer, as the Chronicle says, churning out generation after generation of nuclear missiles and military satellites. And this had gone on since 1956. But it isn't just the behemoths Lockheed Martin. You have more than 900 companies from Healdsburg in the north of San Francisco to San Jose south selling to the military. And it $4 billion into the local economy. And this doesn't even account for the Homeland Security and the nuclear weapons labs that are housed here. And that is another $2.3 billion with Homeland for the nuclear, while the weapon, the Homeland Security is yet to be seen with the various computer services, such as Savvy Technology in Sunnyvale, which has created a computer system that is used by the military, and it tracks every tube of toothpaste, every bullet, every airplane part, and everything else that the military ships overseas, or SRI, which has produced a translating system for the troops in Afghanistan. Ralph?
The magazine on future warfare, published in May 2003, feature piece called The Cost of Empire. New York Times columnist Paul Krugman provided the best summary as to why America crushed Iraq when he wrote, "I am not a military expert, but I can do the numbers. The most recent U.S. military budget was $400 billion. Iraq spent $1.4 billion. Over 51% of the expenditure on military in the world is attributed to the Pentagon, and that's but a shadow of the actual number because the special operations and the intelligence agency and the black budgets are not included. 1/15/10,000th of a percent was spent by Iraq. And now that country devastated by this Goliath. And the article continues, the U.S. actually spends over $500 billion a year, and that does not include the secret black budget and the now annual supplemental spending. And the article continues, few Americans realize that the neocons have increased the size of the federal government faster in 2 years than in the 8 years of the Clinton administration. Military spending is higher than Cold War levels, even after adjusting for inflation. Millions of Americans accept the neocon ploy that it requires more money to defend against a few hundred Arab fugitives, the article states, than the entire Soviet Union throughout the 1980s, and that a so-called terror attack is more threatening than total nuclear war. This strategy is based on H.L. Mencken's revelation many years ago when he wrote, the entire aim of practical politics is to keep the populace alarmed and hence clamorous to be led to safety by menacing it with an endless series of hobgoblins, all of them imaginary. And this article continues, that is why the neocons insult America's creditors and they are dangerous. That is why the creditworthiness of the United States is now in substantial jeopardy. That is why the capitalist system is in crisis in the United States, this important article denotes.
Waste production. The military is waste production because it does not expand and create new sources such as education would or other services throughout the economy. Now, we have, with the over $400 billion a year from the budget that goes to the military, as we said, that's half of all the spending worldwide. But the U.S. defense spending is comparable to the 14 largest military budgets combined. Imagine that. Nowhere, no country has spent any where near or has any military comparable to the U.S. military. The amount that was spent just on the recent assault against Iraq. Now, this is not to cover the troops who are stationed in Iraq, who are occupying Iraq. It does not cover any of the reconstruction, and I contend that they're going to pay for the reconstruction of Iraq by huge debt upon the Iraqi people. To account for the for $60 billion of it, let's look at that. $12 billion would provide basic health and food to the world's poor. $12 billion would rebuild America's public schools over 10 years. $6 billion would provide health insurance to all uninsured American children. Imagine that. And $2 billion would fully fund Head Start to provide a basis for young children to have education. The National Priorities Project in Northampton, Massachusetts, at nationalpriorities.org, did a study of federal income tax around the time, around April 15th, when people were paying their taxes. And they looked at what $100 billion of war spending would be, because $100 billion is more than the total of individual income taxes paid in the United States. Individual income taxes are $81.3 billion, which is actually comparable to the first appropriation that was done by Congress for the assault on Iraq. Of that portion, $2.4 billion is contributed just by people in New York City, and $279 million of the people in San Francisco, which is comparable to the San Francisco debt, and close to $1 billion of people in Los Angeles. Now, you look at this. The cost of just the first stage of the assault against the peoples of Iraq is the same as the amount of money that the United States collects from all the individual income tax of the people of the United States.
Let's look at how this plays out. Randeep Ramesh in The Guardian in London on March 20th, an article called America's $400 Billion War Bill. War costs, but it is unclear who is picking up the tab. Bush is not financing this campaign through taxation. This president is cutting the tax and sending a welfare check to the wealthy while he raises military spending. It is an extraordinary enrichment of the privileged few. The president is reheating Reaganomics, cutting back welfare, overcompensating with defense spending, and offering huge tax cuts to the rich at the expense of the poor. The strategy is reckless. The article continues. A $1.5 trillion tax cut is by any estimation a large sum, even before the cost of the war against Iraq and its aftermath are added on to it. What are the consequences? To finance the new wars that are prepared in Iran, in Syria, and North Korea next, the White House will spend more than it collects in taxes, and the result is galloping budget deficit. More government debts will push up long-term interest rates, which will eliminate growth. The United States relies on the rest of the world to finance these deficits, and the rest of the world would do so when the U.S. economy was strong. But the investors' cash will go elsewhere, as the United States no longer looks as if it is booming. The Bush plan prepares an even greater hole in the coming years, and the rest of the world will no longer want to lend more and more cash to a failing U.S. capitalist economy.
Ralph, that's exactly what is happening. On May 12th, Reuters published that the dollar tumbled to a four-year low against the euro. And this means that there's a steady weakening of the dollar. 36%, that's almost two-fifths, of the federal debt is in private hands, in international private hands, primarily the Japanese and the Saudis. And If you look at an article that was published April 6, 2003 in the New York Times, it's called The Iraqi Time Bomb, and it's by Jeff Maddox, who's an economist, the author of Why Economies Grow, and the editor of the magazine called Challenge. The Iraqi Time Bomb is an article people have to read over and over again. Because in it, he elaborates the consequences of this unrelenting push for permanent war and the debts that it is accumulating. He said, more alarming is the decline of government revenues over the long run. The government will now have come up $2 trillion short through 2013. And this is after years and years, 4-year run of substantial surpluses. When President Bush came into office, he said the United States was in a fiscal health, that there were these surpluses. And what he did was he turned around, he had tax cuts, and what the administration has announced is that they intend to have tax cuts every year. So this $2 trillion short through 2013 is only the beginning of the estimates. Budget deficits as far as the eye can see. That is the consequence, according to Jeff Maddox. But you don't have to just rely on him. Budget deficits as far as the eye can see is the report of the Congressional Budget Office, too.
This is articulated by Daniel Altman in the New York Times on March 30th, as you're describing it, Maya, and he calls it the end of taxes as we know them. In the economy as well as in Iraq, the White House is aiming for regime change. The president is preparing tax relief of such size that tinkering around the edges does not begin to describe it. It has turned to supply-side economics, removing taxes, and enriching the rich on a scale never before undertaken. The threat of worsening deficits, rather than the supply-side principle itself, is threatening the stability of the economy itself. The administration's previous cuts in income investment taxes became law in 2001, and these alone will cost the government over $1 trillion in taxes. But this will not be the end of the tax cuts. The White House strategy has three parts, the article continues. The first is ending taxes on stock dividends. The second entails the elimination of the shelter of families' entire portfolios. Indeed, discarding the estate tax will take away the last tax on the most affluent Americans' wealth. A fourth part of the plan will make private investment accounts a part of Social Security. And indeed, if adopted, the first three parts will essentially replace the current income tax system with a tax on paychecks, which means that the big investment portfolios will no longer come with tax bills, and the entire tax burden will shift to those whose income comes from wages. This is class war. This is the wholesale heist, the theft of the fruit of the labor of working people in the United States. And indeed, the article states, while most wholesale changes in economic policy, the Bush administration's steps represent a giant gamble. We are indeed in the presence of a policy that threatens the stability of the system. The article continues.
Now let's go back to Jeff Maddox with the Iraqi time bomb, because he mentions that economists figure that the size of the federal debt will rise from 33% of gross domestic product, which, by the way, is a percentage that wouldn't be tolerated anywhere by bankers anywhere else in the world, to 49%, almost half of all the goods and services produced here in the United States. The federal revenue needed just to pay the interest on this debt will be enormous. Where will it come from? As Ralph has mentioned, they are going to reduce all the taxes on wealth and on the stock market, pouring more and more money into this speculative enterprise that has seen, with its collapse recently, $7 trillion of value loss, destroying the pension funds of many people that we know and others throughout the throughout the United States. But specifically, what Madrick points out, that what will take place over the next 10 years and what we have seen already in state after state, in New York City and here in California, will involve deep cuts in programs from Medicaid to school lunches to college loans to, as he says, perhaps most cynically in the current environment, veterans' benefits. The Center on Budget and Policy Priorities calculates that reductions in mandatory programs, and by mandatory they mean that these are mandated programs for the elderly, that's Social Security, Medicare, veterans, and the poor, would come to $265 billion over 10 years. Another $210 billion will be lopped off discretionary programs. The total of $475 billion, almost half a trillion dollars, is equal to the tax reduction the president is requesting for the top 1% of earners in America. Take from us to give to the rich. World War IV throughout the world, and particularly a war on the people, the working people of the United States, too.
In the Washington Post, Maya, on May 11th, Dana Milbank and Dan Bolts extrapolate the GOPI's tax cuts as annual events. With the House passage of a $550 billion tax cut plan, Congress is moving towards the third tax reduction in as many years, the same number passed in an entire generation before Bush came to office. Yet the impressive trio of reductions is only a small step towards the administration's goal, non-stop tax cuts. The White House officials have told their allies they will attempt a new tax cut, incrementally greater, every year that Bush remains in office, and there's already preparation for the next round. The ultimate target, overhauling the tax code, sharply reducing the size of government, eliminating social services. Paul Weyrich, a conservative with ties to Bush, said he was told at a White House meeting, "We intend to offer a new tax cut every year," a view top Bush aides have expressed to a number of business lobbyists. Grover Norquist, an anti-tax advocate who works closely with Bush aides, predicts, "You'll have a tax cut each year. I state it that way in all of the White House meetings, and there is no argument." Bush's determination to push multiple rounds of tax cuts, as much as $550 billion and $1.35 trillion at a time, comes in the face of evidence that the American people do not support this. The latest Washington Post ABC poll found that given the choice between tax cuts and spending on domestic priorities, 67% of the public oppose these tax cuts. But it has no impact because the two parties are the one big property party with two names, and the pillage of the American people proceeds apace in service of permanent war, in service of unparalleled profits, the disappearance of trillions of dollars of the Pentagon's nominal budget into offshore accounts. It is a kleptocracy, this capitalist system, and it is essential that we understand that the two property-based parties have no systemic answer to the crisis that is afflicting the people of the United States and the people of the world. We will be terrorized. We will be lied to. We will be afflicted and assaulted by this regime and by this capitalist system until we build a political alternative, until we take power in our own hands through struggle. Because on April 21st, 2003, the New York Times spelled out what is ahead of us. States facing major budget shortfalls. Cut the major, cut the mundane. Lincoln, Nebraska. At a time when the governor of Missouri has ordered every third light bulb unscrewed to save money. when teachers are doubling as janitors in Oklahoma and working 2 weeks without pay in Oregon, when Connecticut is laying off prosecutors, when Kentucky is releasing prison inmates early, when the veterinarian crisis in Nebraska seems like small potatoes, the crisis afflicting states across the United States is escalating. The states are desperate, struggling with their worst financial crises since World War II. They have tapped rainy day funds, raided tobacco money supposed to have provided health care for children, and taxed every vice. Layoffs, the elimination of libraries, closing early, roads without asphalt. The states scramble to find ways to cut $100 billion this year and next from budgets that must by law be balanced. The cuts are larger. Their effects profound. It is not just that the states are withdrawing health care for the poor and the mentally ill. They are dismissing state troopers, closing parks and schools, dropping bus routes, eliminating college scholarships, and slashing a host of services long taken for granted. And these budget decisions are neither popular nor accepted. The people are not in favor of them. Nothing is off the table. Cities and states are stuffing slot machines into gas stations and lending basic services out for commercial bid. In Pleasant Ridge, Michigan, the police are considering deals to allow companies to advertise on the sides of patrol cars in exchange for state vehicle cheap vehicle leases. The state governments in this country are under siege, said Angela Monson, president of the National Conference of State Legislatures. This is the real deal, and it's only going to get worse.
Steve Lopez reporting in the Los Angeles Times on March 30th, the war's dirty secret, it's about changing the United States, not Iraq. Unless you're lucky enough to be an investor, Lopez writes, in one of the corporations that will win multi-million dollar contracts to build Iraq, you may be hurting when the cost of the war and a new era of deficit spending put even more of a drag on the economy. The whole idea is to train you to expect less and to feel patriotic about it. And in the New York Times, a few weeks later, April 3rd, factory orders fall, military sales rise. Of the 112 total workforce in the United States, manufacturing accounts for one-seventh of the economy and employs only 16 million people. Factory most of the people are in service industries. Factory orders falling, military sales rising, and this has been the case over and over again. Military capital goods, such as the Tomahawk cruise missile, which Raytheon manufactures, the orders were 23% higher in February than a year earlier. Bookings for military communications equipment surged 14%, while industrial machinery orders plummeted 29%, and orders for computers dropped 17%.
And Maya, this article in the New York Times is an extraordinary document. Measures, it states, that voters approved in wide margins in states across the United States. Property tax exemptions for the elderly, teacher salary increases, new parks and open space have been eliminated. Washington State, with the nation's largest ferry fleet with 25 million passengers a year, has announced plans to drop the commuter ferries. In Texas, 275,000 fewer children will receive health care. The state already ranks first in the number of children without medical coverage. In Ohio, 50,000 people will be cut from health coverage, the largest increase of uninsured Ohioans in history. In Colorado, suspended property tax breaks for 120,000 elderly residents. The tax exemption had saved Carol DeBoer, who lives in suburban Denver, $400 a year. I am living one day to the next right now, said Mrs. DeBoer, whose husband has Alzheimer's. We worked hard our entire lives. We paid our taxes. If there's enough money for these wars, why isn't there money to help seniors?
No programs immune from the state budget acts, potentially unprecedented cuts, especially tough on lean counties, was the San Francisco Chronicle report on Sunday, May 11th. This is the worst year I've seen, and I've been doing this 30 years, said Paul Goldfinger, vice president of School Services of California. People are saying, we were down to the bone before this. What's left to cut?
And indeed, with respect to education, the article states, no matter their political stripe, governors and legislators used to be united in one way. They vowed to protect and enhance education. Last year, budget cuts were implemented that do not spare the schools. Layoff notices to elementary and high school teachers have appeared in over a dozen states. Colleges, the source of new jobs for many states, have been hit hard. Money already allocated to colleges is no longer secure. The University of Oklahoma was told to return all money to the state. In college towns like Athens, Georgia, for sale signs are ubiquitous. You can go around town and you see houses for sale for everywhere, said Dr. Kristen Boudreau, an associate professor of English at the University of Georgia. For administrators, the choices are either raise tuition or drop the staff, and they are doing both. The University of Iowa has increased tuition by 18%. In Nebraska, rising tuition and staff cuts sparked a huge protest at the Capitol. Among those objecting to the cuts was a former quarterback for the University of Nebraska's football team, Steve Taylor, who said tuition increases make it impossible to keep young people in the state. Prospective students are talking about not coming here because they are not sure there will be programs here. Nebraska has a $761 million budget shortfall. Education is the target. And Governor Mike Johanns, the Republican, in a Republican-dominated state, said the budget hole is too deep to protect the things that people want. Elementary schools, music programs, special education products are being eliminated. In Portland, there was a last-minute effort to keep schools open for the full year. In order to do this, teachers had to work weeks without pay, the equivalent of a 5% pay cut. And it goes on in every country, state in the country. In California, the most populous state with the largest budget hole of $30 billion, layoff notices have been sent to 25,000 teachers. The cuts affect poor districts. Summer school no longer be available for elementary students in San Francisco, and the Laguna Beach School District has announced layoffs of one-third of its teachers. This is class war, brothers and sisters. This is the war of the privileged. This is the capitalist system in terminal decay. This is the militarization of our society, the preparation for permanent war. This is the assault on the many by the kleptocratic few. We have the task, we have the responsibility to mobilize a political alternative. Not the same old, not the kleptocracy of the one big property party with two names, not the lemming-like rush into the arms of our oppressors, but the building of a class-based alternative based on working people, the mass of our population, to take power, to struggle for power, to conduct the resistance that is essential for the survival of democratic freedoms and economic survival in our society.
World War IV. This has been
Ralph Shunman
and Maya Schoen.
You've been listening to a special edition of Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. World War IV, the complete three-hour presentation, is still available for your pledge of support at WBAI.org. You can contact Taking Aim by email at takingaim@pacbell.net. That's takingaim@pacbell.net. Or at the voicemail number 212-209-2953. Taking Aim will be back with us next week, next Tuesday at 5 p.m.